Ars Electronica 2008. A new cultural economy.
Hello. I'm not a whiz with this machine, so there might be awkward moments with me getting stuff together here. If you want to not stay up late and drink, make a giant thing of your face the next day. So this is I'm going to show maybe 5 minutes of the movie. It's 17 minutes. It's more or less what was shown before, but it's the first 5 minutes. And it will give you some idea of the techniques and not much of an idea of the movie and the mood of the movie. But I'll just press play here, and there we go. So this is exactly what I was talking about. Yeah, so I guess I have a little sort of lecture thing prepared here. If I can get this working. So yeah, I guess the reason we're here is probably the I scene in general, but just a second. If I prepare this, I'll be ready to go. Oh, for God's sakes. Wait. See, this is why we made a stop-motion movie, because our actual, the way we handle technology is not all that slick. Okay, yeah, so this is, you son of a bitch. Don't look. No one look, for God's sake. Okay, so this is Charlie Chaplin. And this is a quote by Charlie Chaplin. And this was, Chaplin was very inspiring to us, not just for his work methods and with Tootley Pootley. The original idea was we set out to make a kind of female Chaplin. And what we loved about Chaplin was his ability to kind of elicit instant sympathy with an audience. And we wanted to make a kind of surreal and sort of dreamlike film, but we wanted the human element was very important. Otherwise, it's sort of a string of techniques and animation without some heart to it. I don't think we'd be here without that. I think the technique would have been nothing more than a gimmick if the story wasn't, or if the character at least wasn't compelling enough to make you forget the technique. So this is here. The next image is Watson and Crick, who I guess discovered the composition of DNA. And Watson's book was also very inspiring to us as the power of partnerships and the power of debate in making art or science or anything. Maciek and I we believe hugely in debate, and I think if our company, we've worked together for 11 years now, and if our company has any kind of success, it's because of that. And Watson and Crick also went for beers together, which is another secret to making good work, we believe, and coming up with good ideas. It's a time to, you know, at that time of relaxing and letting your mind get free. You're outside of your studio, you're outside of you're not in front of your computer, and you're talking. And you're talking about a variety of subjects, which often will cross-pollinate and go into your work, which is another thing we believe in. We came to animation not even as animation fans, but I guess as film fans, and we think it's a real danger in animation of watching other people's films to inform your film. And we really believe in taking work from stuff that you read in the newspaper or reading an interesting science article you read, and just all that stuff starts to mash up. And Watson also had a great quote, which was, never mistake working hard with thinking hard. This is How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. Was really a Maciek's obsession. But what it comes down to was just an animation. It's even in a naturalistic animation, we thought that there's some to get with animation to get naturalism. You have to exaggerate, and so when we were kids, we both were obsessed with this book, and it's just a question of not doing making at all times try to make your in film make your angles interesting. Don't make your if your character is reaching for a cup, you can see that's Captain America, and then there's an average muscular guy, and so. It's like your characters, I mean, this is maybe not interesting except to animators, but exaggerating everything. This is just this is an early sketch of Madame Tootley Pootley. And I think it's another sketch from theater. And this is kind of interesting too. We also, as far as not watching other people's films, we're huge into art, and we find that one of the past can inform. There's such great art from the past as far as like open source. You can open source to museums all over the world, and you get great. There's great inspiration there. And this was initially before we had. This might have actually come up with the idea of putting in real eyes might have come up from this painting, which is by a German artist named Christian Schad. And the eyes here were so vivid, and there was something about this character that was so compelling that this before we built a puppet, before we made a sketch, there was this woman, and was quite fascinating and amazing to us. And the eyes were, there was such a soul behind the eyes that we realized that by building a puppet with glass eyeballs would never ever do. It would never have the, there'd never be a soul behind it, no matter how well we animated. And so that was the beginning of the challenge of what is the solution then? Well, how do we get the thinking behind the eyes? The technique is, it's not about the eyes, it's about the kind of the brain behind it, the thoughts that you get to see, which no matter how great your eyeballs are, and no matter how much, I don't know if you wet them or whatever you do, that will never get that. And again, this is also just finding, staying out of the, getting out of your medium is really, really important, and getting out of the comfort zone of your medium, and looking and having your eyes open for anything. I mean, this came from Harper's Magazine. It was just in the beginning, and there was something about her that was so perfect. It was the same kind of character as Tootley Pootley, this sort of worn down person. And we also find that once, when you come up with an idea and you start to see your idea in different forms all over the place, that that's when you're getting, the archetype is getting closer. You know that you're onto something. And with that in mind, this is a print from Cindy Sherman's untitled prints or film series, and this is a shot of Tootley Pootley from the storyboards that we cut out. And this was accidental, actually. But what we love about Cindy Sherman was her, and this series in general, was the fact that we thought that every frame in our film should have, or at least as many frames as possible, should have that iconic film quality, a kind of like that, and again, like an arc, that she'd be an archetypical woman. So that's what that comes from. And again, as far as just the accidents, this was a complete accident. This picture of Chad, and what's interesting too is the idea of, I guess, for us, it's not a question of copyright laws, or we love taking the like images from the past and artists from the past and reusing them and taking. We think one of the greatest things about animation is you can take all of your favorite dead artists and stick them into your work, either as characters or as images. And this is we didn't show this scene, but there's a scene later with thieves, and this is on the right. It's a picture by, it's a photograph of George Grosh, dressed as a character called Dada Death. And there was something about the costume that was just really excellent. Instead of kind of making up your own monsters or making up getting down to the sketchbook and inventing these things, there's just something so great about taking the art you love and putting it back into your movies. So this is a Japanese artist named Fujita that we stuck into our movie as the old man. The chess players are, of course, are Marcel Duchamp and Man Ray, the artists. And it's not about, I think the danger is that the movie would be that you need Cole's notes, or there should be liner notes explaining who everyone actually is, but that's not really what's important. What's interesting is that by taking real people, and putting in, for us taking real people, it's a shortcut to character. So we knew we wanted this funny scene with chess players, but the minute it was Man Ray and Duchamp, then we immediately knew it was their kind of their friendship and their rivalry and their distinct personalities as artists, even in a small scene, could give the scene just a little more life than if we'd, come up with a guy with a mustache and and another guy with a top hat or something, you know. So we find that kind of thing is quite interesting. And again, I think not looking at animated movies for your ideas, but art. This is the head of Duchamp, which is we built them out of silicone. And when we started, electronic, but when we started painting the silicone, it was tremendously difficult. It's like painting with oils, and the characters are so tiny that it's impossible. And what we eventually realized is that we didn't need to be perfect with it. What led us to not being perfect was again like going through the bookshelf and finding this book by Egon Schiele, and that painting technique, the Antarctica painting technique, was really inspiring to us, and to not actually have to worry about any kind of perfectionism. And there, for the eyes, you can see actually how before the real eyes go in, we would build these sort of half eyes and stick pins in them. And again, this is the art of, who's that painting? Edward Hopper, which was, for us, like the lighting was very important to us, and we spent a long time getting the lighting right. And again, to go back into the artist we love and the work we love to get that inspiration was quite important. That's the same thing, another Edward Hopper. These are drawings by Robert Wilson that were quite inspiring to the end of the movie. And this is a character from our next film, The White Circus. And we were having a terrible time figuring out how to do a costume for this character, and we realized that we'd once done a job for the National Department of Defense of Canada. This was a Canadian invention. This is the first ever absolutely terrible G-suit that Canada invented, and it ended up looking. We thought it's so ridiculous looking that it. But once we put it on the character, we realized that it looks like we got some crazy French fashion designer to make our character's costume, which is. And again, it's that thing being inspired by many different things from many different areas, getting outside of your comfort zone. Anyway, so that's the art history section of it. And let me also. So I guess I'll get to the technical part, which is how we actually did the eyeballs. Those of you who are interested, just a second. See, the funny thing is, this is actually the first time I've done this lecture alone. I usually have my co-director to tell jokes during these awkward moments. What does iPhoto look like? There it is. Okay, so. This is actually this is me, as I said, when I look insanely young there, which is terrifying, but this is me animating the puppet. So this is, we started the film very much a traditional stop motion film, done in much the same way, in probably exactly the same way that Willis O'Brien animated King Kong. I was probably getting into this. I would stick my hands into this set, 1,000 times a day, and it was tremendously difficult with her. She had this felt hat, and the most awkward thing about animating this puppet for 2.5 years was the only place you could only grab her by the boobs to move her. So it would be constantly you're reaching in as the animator gets a strange. Intimacy with their work, and grabbing this poor woman by the boobs 1,000 times a day was, it got to be very strange. But yeah, so the shots, every shot would begin like this with 24 frames a second, move the character, take a shot, move the character, take a shot. Shots took, I think 15 seconds tended to take about 2 weeks. And during that time, you didn't sleep properly because you were constantly stressed out about the shot and whether you were blowing it, whether it was good, whether it was bad. The set would shift during the night, which you'd have nightmares about. And literally we would finish a shot and then usually go on a bender, the two of us, for till 5 in the morning, and just a relief, and then you'd come in the next morning and set up the next shot. But it was quite an ordeal. And this is Jason Walker, and he would absolutely not approve of me using the shot for him, but I thought it was appropriate since he's got his Oktoberfest hat on. And that's, so the next thing is Jason would get it, the shot, and we would, the next thing was putting in the eyes. Now this is the actress that we found, Laurie Marr, and we found her, this was crucial, casting the character of Tootley Pootley was quite crucial. And we found an actress with, actually in real life, she had sort of abnormally large and expressive eyes. But what you can see here is what we had to do was, because the puppet is silicone, and as I said, we painted it in this sort of Antarctica Chile way. So for the eyes to fit, we had to put quite heavy makeup on her. And you can see, in fact, around her eyes, there's little spots. And those, so we actually had to draw, we had to paint on a kind of puppet texture to her eyes as well, so the blend would work. And what's quite interesting is that as exaggerated as the makeup was, it always looked perfectly realistic once we put her in. So it was absolutely crucial to really damage her eyes. Now there's tracking points there, which was Jason. I think he went through about 15 different kinds of tracking points, and none of them worked. In the end, it was all done by his eyeball. So it was all just by intuition, because there ended up being no computer program or tracking or size or scale that would do this for you. It was totally impossible. So Jason was actually trained as a. None of us went to film school, and none of us have any formal training on computers. Jason was trained as a portrait artist. And that ended up being quite crucial. For him, working on computers was a hobby. We started working with him because we needed someone. We actually said, do we know anybody with a computer? And Jason had one. But luckily he was good on his computer. I guess he was a little dissatisfied with painting as a medium in itself, and he was interested, he's really obsessed and interested in technology, and so he was very into the challenge of this, and the challenge was really, a lot of the challenge beyond the animation was blending and placement, and so someone who has gone to school for his schooling was actually in this kind of art, so. It made a huge. I'm quite sure that no one else on the planet would have had the patience, and combined with the skill that he had to do this. So that's actually shooting the eyes. So that's Laurie. And what we would do is we shot the animation first, and then the actress would, Laurie would come in, and we would prepare the shot with all the movements, so the puppet. We would show that the character did like this for this, like that, and then we have to match the lighting of the original shot, and then very painstakingly, Laurie would, you can see that there's the cotton things on her nose, she would go from cotton ball from chin to nose, and each of those would represent where the character's head actually was in the shot. And beyond that, we also had to, of course, control her eye movements as well, so it was really, excruciatingly difficult for her. And once, I think, and we teach her the moves, and what the difficulty was, not only your head had to be in the precise place that the puppets was, and it also had to, she also had to emote, and she had to be terrified, but she had to have very large acting for it to translate to the puppet, but within very confined movements. And there was a time, and if she learnt it, we could get maybe two shots done in a day with her. It took a couple hours for her to learn the movement, and we matched the lighting. Then she'd get the eye movement, and if we changed anything, it would get very frustrating to her. I mean, once we told her that, I think it was move 12B was wrong, she had to move her head slightly more, and it was too much for her. She actually broke down, and she slapped Maciek across the face, in fact. So, and we thought it was time to take a break. So this is preparing. It was the same thing. It's there was an incredible amount to match. We had to match the lighting perfectly. We had to match the positions perfectly, and everyone had a job. In fact, what was one of the challenges with the eyes is you'd even have to later match light passes that happened in the shot. So we'd have to get we'd have all these lights, and then sometimes, if the train went behind a tree, there'd be a moment where it was a Led Zeppelin record that we'd cover the light up with, and we'd have to get everybody. I think Maciek's uncle at one point, when he was visiting, we'd always give him a job of lighting. And this is the end result. I think even though it was difficult, we had a very good idea when we were working. At one point, Jason was my roommate, and I would do the animation, and the animation would be as good as I could make it, and sometimes that was satisfying. But then, at the same time, Jason was doing these eye shots, and I would come back to our apartment, and Jason would be had been staring at the computer for 8 hours, and he'd say, like, Chris, I finished one. Check this one out. And we would sometimes stare. We would put like a 6-second scene on loop and just watch it over and over and over again. And it was like the feeling was. I didn't guess I'd be standing here talking about it, but we knew something that was a kind of Frankenstein monster excitement. We were seeing a puppet that on. That was something that we hadn't seen before, and that's essentially my shtick. But are there any should we ask questions now or later? Anyone have any questions? Did I miss something that's sort of interesting? Yeah, I'll show you what it actually looked like was this. Where did I put it?
So, any other questions?
Just a sec.
So it's my turn?
Yeah.
Okay, please.
Yeah.
You as movie director, you probably worked a lot with actors. What is the reason? Why do you choose the way to make movies with actors who look like puppets and you don't trust anymore into the the ability of actors? Why do you make movies they look like this and not normal kind of movies? What is the motivation, or is it just for the challenge?
It's a very good question, because I'm not sure we would ever make a movie quite like that again. And we did ask ourselves, couldn't an actress have done this? The sets would have had to be bigger, for one. But it was, I don't know. Again, it's what I was saying. It was a challenge, but it's also the animator's Frankenstein complex of creating life, an illusion of life. And I could hire, I guess I could have hired, if Laurie was a great actress, the woman who was the eyes, and and we shot, we would shoot her, we'd get her to improvise scenes before we animated them, but I don't know, I mean, I think that's where animation is kind of magical, and that's the thing where, and you wouldn't have looked at the film and said, what's going on here, there'd be no mystery or surprise with an actress. But you're right, I mean, the animation is fairly naturalistic, and yeah, maybe it was a waste of time.
Okay. Another question?
Okay. How many puppets did you use for Madame Pupli and how tall they are?
Tootley was about 18 inches tall, so about this big. It was still just a silicone puppet with a wire armature. We didn't use kind of proper robotic armature because we felt the other kind was actually superior. We could twist her into sort of inhuman positions, it's very, very. In that sense, that part of it was sort of a classic stop motion movie, which is why I think we needed something. The film board has a great tradition of innovation and interesting filmmaking, and so if we had done just a classic stop motion movie without some sort of innovation, I think we would have been betraying that tradition.
Okay.
But yeah, I'd say if, for those of you who are interested in these kind of.
There is another question, I think.
It's a very simple question. Just wondering, where can we see the movie?
The film board has, I know some jerk put it up on YouTube where it's free, and it's fine, but it looks terrible. You can watch it on YouTube, but it looks terrible. There's some other guys have thrown it up on, actually, you know what, the funny thing is that I guess I should be upset about the YouTube thing, except I don't get paid for them when it gets sold anyway, so it's actually great. But, and the National Film Board sells it, but I think it's difficult to buy if you're not a Canadian, unfortunately. Their international distribution might be a bit dodgy. So go to YouTube, yeah, forget it.
Okay, so any further questions? So I've just a final question for this discussion. Just give us a little bit information about your next project. You told me that you will use, you will combine live action and puppetry as well. So I'm interested, do you still start with the animation and then combine it with live action, or are you thinking about another procedure for the next project?
Well, I think in some ways we took the gentleman's criticism to heart and realized we should just get actors sometimes to do these things. And I think we also with the eye technique we did it. We're not interested, like, to be the animation company to put real eyes in. It was really boring. It was a boring future for us. So yeah, we're going to, I guess, do a hybrid of real actors, but. Impose them into hand-built miniatures and have them interact with. Wow, I'm using all of your buzzwords. Have them interact with animated characters, stop-motion characters. So it would be kind of like a kind of art house Ray Harryhausen movie. We're building it. It's sort of based on the work of Dadaists and Otto Dix and George Grosch, and so we've. We're making automaton war veterans who will be the parts of them that are metallic will be stop motion, and it'll all be mixed up and stuck around.
Yeah. So thank you. I think we are running out of time. I think you can prepare the presentation.
Right,
thank you very much.